Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. And I have a wonderful guest tonight that I have known for years, but really don't know all of her story. So I'm really hoping that we can get to know Kathy a little bit tonight. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Hey, great, Pam. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's good seeing you, and I'm really excited that you're a guest on the show today. So to get us started, could you introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
Yes, my name is Kathy Olish Massajewski. I'm from Grosse Isle, Michigan, which is an island that's between Canada and a little town called Wyandotte in Michigan. So it's a pretty cool area to be in. I work at Ford, been at Ford for 26 years already now. I'm married with two kids, ages 5 and 6, two boys. And probably my biggest hobby right now is anything related to taking up pictures and of my kids and anything that I see. So that's really my biggest hobby now. And just like hanging out with friends, even though these days it's 6 feet away. So that's about it for me.
Yeah. So, and we're Facebook friends, and I've seen you for years at the conferences, but I remember, maybe it was last year or the year before, you brought your boys to the conference. So I got to see them in real life. Oh my God, I can't believe there's 5 and 6 already.
I did. Yeah. My oldest has been to 3.
Okay.
And he's 6 now. So, you know, he'll be attending more regularly very soon.
That's great. And I thought there was more than just a year's difference between the two of them, because Owen looks so little compared to Luke.
Yeah, well, they're actually 5 weeks short of 2 years apart. So Owen just turned 5. Luke will be 7 and actually next week. So
okay.
But yeah, I have two boys, but it sounds like in the house there's sometimes 4 or 5 boys, as loud as they are. You know how boys can be.
Yeah. So you said that you work for Ford Motor Company?
Yes.
And what do you do there? What kind of work?
I'm in HR, and I actually, as of August 1st, I'm doing two jobs. My previous job was in the executive personnel department. So my role for 15 years has been, I was one of the main point of contacts for all of our vice presidents and above. So on a daily basis, I could receive a call from a VP or a GVP or the CEO, or lots of email interaction, meeting with new hires or in their office. So that was my main role there, among other things. And now I've moved on to a position where I'm recruiting and I'm recruiting and meeting with new employees who are the next level down from VPs. So I'm kind of in the same realm, but meeting with a little bit of a lower level employee. But needless to say, it involves a lot of talking and coordinating and meeting with people, and a lot of times I'm their first point of contact in their new role. So it's very cool, interesting, but it could cause a lot of anxiety, you know, for many reasons.
Yeah, I imagine, because for all the people that you and I both know in the stuttering community, we know that talking on the phone can be super stressful. And it sounds like you do quite a bit of that. So, you know, where does your stuttering come into play? How do you manage that?
Well, as you know, and as many people know, I'm very covert. I'm not being that right now when it comes to talking to friends who stutter or NSA outings and events. I'm pretty much lay it all out there at times. But at work and outside of the NSA, I should say, I pretty much try and hide it. So talking on the phone is pretty tough. It depends who I'm talking to. If there's a relationship there, I'm relaxed and I can substitute words that make sense or rephrase like I do a lot. It's not so bad. It's those times where, you know, there's certain words you can't change because it'll have a different meaning. And that's where I have a hard time with. So when it comes to taking calls, I take them, I make them, but my preferred way of communicating is via email. And then over the years I've learned when I give anyone info that they're asking for, I'm very great. And I've been told this at anticipating what else they're going to need because I want to avoid a phone call back. So I'll give them all, you know, everything they need and more. And they're like, wow, this is great. I didn't even think about asking that, but thank you. So it is tough. I think the phone has always been an issue because they can't see you. So your guard's a little bit, at least with me, my guard's a little bit more down. So I tend to not as be on guard as much. But yeah, I mean, I have to get my job done. So try and keep it hidden when I can.
Yeah. That sounds like an amazing amount of mental gymnastics. You said it causes some anxiety, but isn't that just exhausting too?
It yes and no. It's exhausting because as we know, you know, there's many people who learned easy onsets and other techniques to make them sound fluent. I haven't really learned any of that. I taught myself more like what I call tricks and techniques, you know, like do the cough or the sneeze or the long pause or pretend you saw someone you know and then get back to the word you were going to say. So on the days when I'm blocking a lot, I'm actually more exhausted from blocking than on days where I rephrase and switch my words around and do everything I can to sound fluent because that's something I'm so used to doing that it's normal to me. But like, and for example, on days when I know when I have a big meeting where either you have to say your name or you have to talk a lot and you're leading a meeting, and depending who you're meeting with too, I think who you meet with is a big piece of it. And my husband knows this, for a couple of days before I go to bed early, I don't eat hours before, I make sure I get my rest. I don't plan any big outings because I want to make sure I'm on my game, and I do a lot of meditation and breathing, you know, and mental, like, you know, you're going to be fine. It's no big deal. I mean, so that part of it is exhausting because I think I miss out on a few things here or there, or, you know, making plans. And I sometimes can't dictate what days those meetings are. So that part could be exhausting, but the hiding itself is not, at least in my case.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you said you said that you've been at Ford for 26 years. Does anybody know that you stutter in your workplace?
There's been only one or two people I've told. One person happens to be a very high level person. I was at a town hall meeting. This was several years ago. And he got up there and he started talking and I was like, wait a minute, he's my people. And it was just amazing. And then about 6 months later, I got a chance to meet with him and I thought, okay, you know, let me mention it. Cause you know, one, he inspired me, by being up there in front of hundreds of people, and he was a very high level employee. So I met with him on what I was going to, and after we're done, I'm like, could I talk to you? And so I told him, and I said, that was very cool of you. And we talked about it for about a minute, and I wasn't sure. He received it very well, but I don't know if he really felt ready to talk about it, or if it didn't, he didn't really care about it. So I kind of, you know, that's the only time we talked about it. And for the last year and a half, we've talked every month on email because of my role, and it's never been mentioned again, but he's one of the first people that I talk to. So there's only one or two. Mm-hmm. However, there's people that I've worked with who, if you look up my name on the web, you'll find everything, so many NSA related articles and stuttering as well. So there was one person who made a comment, and I didn't want to talk about it. So I just kind of, yeah. And then I changed the subject, but most people don't know. I don't advertise where I'm going every year with 800 other people that I know. So, bottom line is no, I don't really talk about it at work. I just somehow get by.
Yeah. Wow. I can relate to that, because I think you know, but I was also covert for many years, and then I had a pivot moment where I just couldn't do it anymore, and emotionally I was ready to let it go and, you know, be more open. So for me, though, it was extremely it was extremely exhausting for me to like coordinate all that stuff in my head all the time, and like think ahead of a word that might be coming up that I might stutter on, and then think of an alternative. So I did find it really hard. But my first introduction to you was when I went to my very first conference, and I went to this workshop called Covert Stuttering Exposed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, like, first of all, it was the first time I'd heard the word covert, which meant I had an explanation for what I'd been doing so many years. But I was also intrigued with, what do they mean by exposed? So listeners may also be interested in knowing, like, so what was the whole premise behind exposing covert stuttering?
Well, and I remember the year you did the workshop. I remember you were on the panel one time too. And there's many people like you have come to an NSA conference and feel like, you know, this isn't me. I don't fit in. I'm not really sure. And then they come to the covert workshop and they're like, wait a minute, that's me. So it really began my first conference. I went to my first NSA meeting in Royal Oak, Michigan in 1999. Mm. And since Chicago was 2000 and it was 4-hour drive away, a bunch of us decided to go. And so we went, and the first year everyone kept asking, are you an SLP? Are you an SLP? Cause you know, you're not like us. That's cause I was hiding. And so a couple months after that, Russ Hicks, who many of you know, he put together myself and two other people on a call. And I was like, what do you want to talk about? And he said, you guys are covert people who stutter. And even I said, what do you mean? And so we realized that we're all people who hide, and we get away with being fluent. And it's not by avoiding, because we talk and we do things, but we just somehow hide our disfluency. And so that's kind of how it began. So the workshop exposed is more like challenging us who present to share our story. And many people who presented on the panel don't really share outside the NSA, or haven't shared with anyone before. They're there. So that's the premise behind why we have the word exposed on there.
Yeah. My first conference was in 2006, in Long Beach.
Long Beach, yes.
And, you know, I went to that workshop, and then I vividly remember I was on the panel the next year, 2007. I'm like, oh, like, wow, like I had never done that before. So that was the start of my feeling that I could actually be, you know, free and open about this. But I've got to ask, how did Russ Hicks know that you were a covert stutter? Because he's not.
He's the farthest thing from it. He just honed in on it. I don't know. It was magic. He, the two other people on the panel lived near him in Dallas. So he knew them real well. And they were new around the same time I was. And maybe just the pattern we talked. No, I'm not really sure how it began. I will have to ask him because I'm curious now. He just, and we're like arguing with him, no. And then somehow the term, even there's people who come now that have never heard about it. Now, I know a lot of people who are SLPs who teach at universities, and now they're talking about it, but it's not, for some reason, it hasn't taken off like some of the other topics have. But every year we have a workshop, and I truly believe there's more people who are covert out there, who are hiding, who are feeling isolated or not sure what's going on because they can. And I think anyone who is over and is unable to hide it might not get why or how we do. So I really think that there's more of us out there who are too ashamed to seek help, or maybe they don't think they need help, or what kind of help could they have, or maybe it's, you know, not really happening. So really think it's a very important topic that needs more exposure, as we're using the word exposed.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, this podcast episode, you know, this is going to be inspiring to other people, but particularly women who do hide and who think that they have to, and also may not have a word, you know, for what they're doing. But I was also going to say that, you know, last year at the last in-person conference that we had, for whatever reason, there wasn't like a formal covert workshop on the schedule. And I remember like that last Friday, as I know you do, word got out and there was an impromptu covert, I'm not even going to say it was a workshop, it was like a circle, right? And how
was it? Hangout, open mic, yeah. Yeah, it was a last minute thing because I turned in the proposal a couple days late, and Tammy advised me that was too late, and I really should have pushed back on that. That was my fault. I had the dates mixed up. So while we were there, we chatted and, you know, decided. So we called it, it was more like a hangout, but it was a open mic, and it's put together in less than a day, and the numbers, I don't even know how many people are there. A lot of people were there, and hearing some people share that, you know, again, every year when we do the workshop, there's always someone, at least one or two, who say, hey, you know, I've been here all week, I haven't felt like I fit in until I, you know, attended this workshop, or they're like, you know, I didn't know that there were so many people like me, or I used to hide and now I don't, and here's what helped me. So it was amazing because I believe, you know, just because someone's over there, they may not be okay with their speech, but when you're hiding it, it's like the iceberg. We all know what the ice, you know, the iceberg is. When you're over, you can see the iceberg, you know, you're going to go into it. You know, when someone talks that, you know, they're going to block in the spine, but when you're hiding it, you only see the tip of the iceberg. And there's so much more fear and embarrassment and anxiety because you're working so hard to hide it that a lot of people miss out on a lot of things. So having that there every year is just, it's a key part. And like you, when you attended your first workshop, there's always those people who just feel like, wow, everything you said, I could relate to. And getting new people on the panel to always share. And it's, there's a piece of our journey that everyone could relate to on some level.
Exactly. And, you know, to be honest, I thought last year's impromptu, covert stuttering circle, I think that was like the best experience because we were all in a circle. You know, I felt like, wow, like people feel so encouraged and empowered to share. It was just like going around the circle. And I actually liked that format better. Not saying one is, more effective than the other, but I just felt like having somebody sitting down and sharing as opposed to people standing up in front of the room and like talking at you. I think things are beginning to evolve a little bit where, it just becomes more of like a shared expression. I really loved it. It being in that big circle like that. And I think there was about 50 people there, right?
50 at least. Yeah. Yeah. It was at least that. And people just kept, entering the room and, we had no power and it was dark and it was hot and it was already the end of the day. It was almost 5 and people wanted to make their dinner plans, but yet they hung out. And I think it could have gone almost all night. I did do a workshop, I think the year prior to that, it was where there was three breakout circles, and one person would lead each discussion. One was talking about how it is to hide and people who currently hide, and then the next one was was talking about how we can be more open about it or be more okay with about it, even if we do hide. And the third one was more SLP related and how can we get the most out of speech therapy, or how can the speech therapist best treat someone who's covert? And like you said, after last year's impromptu, I think we'll do that more every year. And just have like 8 or 9 people at a time talking so everyone gets an equal amount of time to share. Because the problem with that type of forum is everyone wants to talk and some people take longer or share more. And it's important just if someone could just have a space to get it off their chest and share how they feel. Sometimes that makes a world of a difference. And I've seen people share and they're like, oh, I'm just like you. And then, they have this bond because they come from the same exact background. Or maybe they're in the same exact line of work and they have the same challenges. So I think that kind of forum, I think that's a way that we're going to move with this. And I'm ready to submit, when it opens up next year. So
yeah, well, fingers crossed that the crazy times that we're in right now, will improve so that that can happen. But you said something interesting at the start of our conversation. You said that you think that there's more of us coverts out there than we know. I think because there are so many people who are covert, there's probably more people that stutter, more than the 1% that we say, because we don't know all those people that are hiding, stuttering, and in many cases, very well.
Agree.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. And if you think about there's times when you're out and about, and you're out with friends at a restaurant, or you're at a store, and you can kind of pick up on someone who's disfluent, and we all are. Everyone is at times. I always am, but most people are at times, but I've caught more people that I've met. I could tell when they're changing words and you talk to them long enough, you're like, I know what they're doing. and sometimes it's so obvious. Mm. But I definitely think that there are more people. And some of these people who are hiding might not, if they take a poll on anything, might not even want to admit it to anyone that they do. And just the many people I know who have come and gone to the NSA, a lot of them are people who were or are covert people. Mm-hmm. So I truly believe that these people just don't seek out help, or they, you know, maybe it doesn't bother them, but if it didn't really bother them, they wouldn't seek to hide.
Right.
But
right.
There's no way to, and I think with the recent media and the movies, and it's, I think it's becoming more accepted and people are learning more about it. So that might help some of these people seek more help or become more open about it. So I think the more people advertise and learn about it, you know, the better.
Yeah, I always like to say the more people normalize stuttering.
That's good.
Yeah, because when we stutter openly and we act like we're okay with it and we're confident, that's usually the cue that the listener needs to also like be totally okay with it.
And everyone has their own baggage. So or things that they like to change, or they're embarrassed about, or they don't feel like they fit in. And I don't really disclose. I have a handful of friends who I have before. And it was very hard, you know, when I do tell them, but I'd say a good portion of the time they say, yeah, you know, you had a weird pattern of talking, you know, I wouldn't have labeled that, but you know, that's part of the reason why I make sure I highlight my hair blonde, just teasing, but I am Polish. So I blame it on that. And I am ADD. So they somehow blame it on that too. But, many people have said, oh, you know, I have this thing that, you know, and then they share with me something. So by you letting that guard down and letting someone in on this big piece of your life, they feel more comfortable doing the same. And what you're hearing right now is not how I am outside to like neighbors and friends. Cause I'm relaxed here and I know we're talking about it, but for the most part I hide, and there's times where I'd rather be seen as less intelligent than I am, but more, come off as more fluent. So that's something I'm really trying to work on and care less, but it's, you know, I'm definitely in a better place than I was when I first found the NSA, because, before I would have never allowed any blocks out, any minor blocks. And now, you know, at home I am, and I have two boys, my boys who I said are 5 and 6, they both stutter. So for the someone who's a queen of hiding it, the queen now has two boys. And so that has made me face my own much more and become a little bit more accepting. It doesn't bother them. They don't really have much of an idea of they're even doing it. So it's, you know, seeing them being okay with it. And when my oldest is teased, you know, he just tells them not to. And it's like, you know, why can't I be like that? So they're teaching me to accept my own and own it more.
That's so awesome to hear.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's, you know, my oldest is very moderate. My younger is more mild, but it's definitely been there. And I can't wait to get them more involved. And we talk about it, and they'll use the, you know, as I call it, the S word, stuttering. I wouldn't say that word for a very long time. I call it the S word. So we'll talk about it. And I bought some kids' books as well. And we'll read it, and they like the books, but they just, it doesn't bother them. And I couldn't ask, you know, I couldn't ask for more than that.
Right.
You know, be who you are. Don't let it get in the way. Don't let anyone tease you. Here's what you say if you are teased. And, you know, so far, you know, they're who they are meant to be, you know? So very proud of them.
Yeah. And they have a great mom, to help them if they reach a point where they feel self-conscious or, a little embarrassed by it, because you'll know what to do and who to point them to and how best to support them.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get them to a conference next year, because they've never met anyone besides me and them. So, well, actually, I take that back. They've met a lot of my NSA friends who stutter many times, and they're patient. They know how it is, but they've never met any kids. So I think they might put two and two together when they see someone their age and like, oh, there's other kids who do, even though they have each other,
right.
But yeah, it's great. Yeah. They're really good kids, and I'm excited to get them more involved and, make it more about them than me. And, anything, I've been owning my own, because at first when we're out and about or we're at friends' homes, and Luke for a while, my oldest was very severe at first, and people would comment like, oh, he's got a speech impediment, and I'd say, oh yeah, but now I'm more to the point of, yeah, I do too, and I leave it at that. So for me, that was a big deal. So they're helping me be more open about my own. So
yeah, wow,
not totally a bad thing.
Wow. No, it's not. And for Luke or, Luke and or Owen to hear you say, and I do too, that is like, that's the complete definition of normalizing it, right? Like if their mom can say, I do too, and it's okay, that will help them self-esteem wise.
Yes. Yes, it will. I totally agree.
Now you mentioned earlier, you said something about speech therapy. Did you ever participate in therapy?
When I was a kid, I remember going from kindergarten to till I got the point to junior high, which was seventh grade.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then that's the age where, it was embarrassing being pulled out to go to speech, and you want to be just like everyone else. So I decided, you know what, I'm not going. And that's around the time I decided to just manage it myself. And that's when I began hiding.
Mm.
And then as an adult, I went one or two times with our chapter's SLP. And because I wasn't willing to allow my blocks out, it did nothing. Because unless I will voluntarily stutter or allow the blocks, easy onsets or the bouncing. And that at the time I wasn't willing to do that. So, I know how a lot of the techniques are, but I think I'm so trained to avoid and rephrase and switch that I think it's too ingrained in me to do anything else. I would be open to it, but I just don't know. And I don't know if I could change at this point. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay. Keep on hiding. I tell people here and there, depending on what they share and how I know them, and if the time is right. But I'm okay. I've been this way for so long. But who knows? That may change at some point.
Yeah. And a person decides to go to speech therapy for themselves. It should never be because somebody said that it might be good for you or you'll get X, Y, and Z out of it. Like if you're not personally motivated for whatever it is that you can get from therapy, then I kind of agree with what you said. Like I'll manage it on my own. But do you think that you might look at speech therapy for the kids if they continue to stutter?
Yes, I actually did. My oldest, Luke, he didn't talk to us about 3.5. And we were monitoring by about 2. We were kind of like, okay, he should be sane a little bit. And so we had him in speech for delayed speech. And then when he started to talk, you know, he was having blocks, which, you know, is normal for many kids. And it just continued. Then it went away for a very short time and it came back. So we did have him in speech for a few months, and then we relocated more south. So we were not near our current SLP. So right now he's relying on the SLP at the school. We did go to our chapter's old SLP, the same person I went to several years ago. We met with him once and he gave me some work to take home to practice with him. And now I do it with both him and I haven't done Owen yet, but I need to. So we practice it. But I'm his mother, so it's different than if it's an SLP. And I think we need to look, I definitely need to look more into it, because the school SLP is great, but they lump everyone together at the same time. So there's not a lot of one-on-one. I think he would benefit. So when we go back, I think I'm going to try and get him online with a good SLP, because even though it doesn't bother him now, that's not to say it won't bother them when they're older. Right. And I know the tools, I don't want to teach them any of mine hiding, but I think it's important to give them the tools now. And even though they're maybe too young to apply them, like the bouncing, you know, when they need it, they'll have it, you know, to apply. So yes, we're totally open to, you know, having him do that.
Yeah. Now, what grade in school is Luke heading into?
Luke's heading into first grade, and Owen in kindergarten.
Have the schools decided that they're going to be in person or online, or what's going on in your area?
It's optional. Well, no, I'm sorry. We have two options, in person or online. After much thought, we decided on in-person learning, because you know, we both work. I'm going into a new role. It's been very hard. And my Luke is very ADHD also, above and beyond everything. So it was beginning, not being around his peers was beginning to have some negative effects on him. So we decided to do in person, and, you know, hoping everything goes good, because I really think he thrives on that personal interaction as well.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I'm not a parent, but I have two sisters that have kids, and it seemed to me, like, for them anyway, it was like a really gut-wrenching decision, like, do I feel it's safe to send my kids back? And like, have you had a chance to go see the school and talk to the staff, and you feel okay with it?
We haven't, but they've had a lot of town hall meetings. I feel, you know, and I've talked to people who are doing the online, and I think no matter what choice you make, you're like, is this the right choice? For safety, I wanted them home, but the mental piece of keeping them home is just as risky as, you know, as anything else, because I can't, I'd have to take time off work, which I can, or I'd have to alter my days, but to have two kids that age sitting in front of a monitor all day, not arguing and making sure they're on task is, you know, I just think they'll be better off with their peers. And the majority of people where we live, I'd say about two thirds of the people are sending them. So, good. And we have, you know, so I'm hoping everything works out fine. I mean, I do fear, I mean, outside of that, you know, we don't go out to eat, you know, at all. They've only been in two stores since March because we had to. We are definitely practicing social distancing and hoping up all their peers and, you know, their family are too. But yeah, I mean, it was the right choice at the right time. So hoping that things get better and we could get back to some better normalcy very soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. 'Cause we know that the, you know, we need this. Human beings, we're social beings. We need to, you know, we need to be with each other and connect with each other. And I'm a very huggy person and I like to hug people. And, you know, just like you, haven't done any of that, you know, since like the end of February, actually. So it's just been really weird. It's a weird time.
It is. And then, you know, blocking wearing a mask too, you know, that's a whole nother topic. Like when I first did, I was like, I kind of like this because I can't see my mouth, like doing all these weird things. But then when, if you're having a silent block or a block, they sometimes don't know you're talking. So it's like, you know, I don't know it's humorous to me, but you know, there's times I'm like, I'm talking, but you can't see my lips because I'm having a hard time. So yeah, it's a whole, you know, and with all that's going on in the world, I'm like, you know, my speech, most people I know don't care about it. We care about it more than anyone. So I try and remind myself of those moments where I do have a hard time being in control of it, you know, with everyone's lives changing so much and being so much harder. You know, I try and think, you know what, they're not going to go home and say, oh, know what she said? She couldn't say her name. They're not going to do that. So I'm trying to like remind myself, you know, there's so much going on in the world. This is a small piece of me and it's a small piece of, you know, what people care about. I don't think anyone does it. It doesn't matter to anyone but me, really. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, we give more headspace to our stuttering than anybody around us would care to. They just don't care. Everybody's got their own agenda.
Yeah. And you know, like you said earlier, you said something about, you know, how there's a lot of women, you know, who stutter and hide. And I think that's because men, you know, they care, but they don't care as much as about details. They don't care much about how they look and, you know, those kind of things that we do. You know, they just shower and go. Like, they don't obsess about it. They don't change 800 times. So I think, you know, being a person who stutter, we want to be perceived, you know, that's our nature, to be perceived as, you know, as good as we can. So I think that's why there's a lot more women that I know who hide than men. That's just my view of it.
I agree.
That's just our nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, I think part of it also relates to the social conditioning that women have had since we were children, that, you know, we're the helper and we're the caregiver and we take care of things and, you know, the nurturer and
yes.
How can we do that if we stutter? So we want to just portray this image of ourselves that we've kind of always grown up thinking, because that's what society kind of tells us, right? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, it does. I mean, we're, you know, we're more critical of ourselves than anyone. I mean, you don't hear too many, you know, every movie or show you see, it's you don't see too many guys who are, you know, more down on themselves or have to be just right. And I just think that we need to give ourselves a break, you know? And I actually think being home where we have more downtime, a lot of people wearing less makeup or casual, I think it's done me a lot of good, you know, like letting go of, you know, trying to be perfect by my eyes, where no one else really, it doesn't matter to anyone else. So I think it's, you know, it might help improve a lot of things, but also make things, you know, a lot worse depending on someone's situation as well.
Yeah. So heading into wind down mode, because it's been like, or it's already been 40 minutes, but
oh wow,
I'm always so like, it's just, I'm always thrilled to have a conversation with another woman who stutters because like time flies. I remember some years ago, you wrote a paper for the International Stuttering Awareness Day online conference. And I will always remember it. It was, my name is Kathy, but you can call me Anne. could
yes.
you speak on that real quick? Like, what possessed you to want to share that?
So I never changed my name, but I often went by Anne when I couldn't say my name. Not to anyone who knew me, but like if you call anywhere and, you know, they want to take your name, or if you're at a store and you want to hold a shirt, or you're at a restaurant, Anne was easier to say. It was my bar name as well. So it was much easier. So I think it was a point of showing how far, because the article talked about other tricks and other ways I avoid to come across as fluent, someone who's fluent. So that article was more to say, hey, you know, I hide it so much that I actually often change my name when I need to at times, because mm-hmm. a lot of times I feel like you're caught on an elevator in between two floors. And at the time, especially, I felt like I didn't stutter enough to fit in the stuttering world, but I wasn't fluent enough to fit in the fluent world. So it's kind of, I was somewhere in the middle. So that article was a lot about that, but just highlighting, like, you know, a lot of NSA people would call me Anne anyways as a joke. So it was just to share my journey as a person who stutters, who will do all they can to hide it, including changing the name. So that was a pivotal article, I think, and it helped me, you know, get to my next point of acceptance.
Yeah, it was pivotal for me too. Just like the first covert stuttering exposed workshop, and then I land on this paper. I didn't even have to read it to know what it would be about. You know, I'm Kathy, but call me Anne. Like, it just struck me like, wow, like the extent that people will go to you know, appear normal, or you know, or and it's a lot. People do a lot, and you know, the non-stuttering world has no idea that we go through, you know, such huge lengths as you've described.
No, they don't. And I try and keep in mind, as I said earlier, that everyone has their own something that they don't want people to see. And who knows what avoidances they're doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, it's something, it's work in progress to be more accepting and a little bit more open with select few. But then at the same time, it's easier to go back to my safe place of hiding, because that's who I am. So I feel like I live in two worlds, like, you know, hi, this is me, but this is also me. So it's... Yeah. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, I believe as long as someone is saying what they want to say, even if they are changing words and doing what they want to do, that it's not an issue. It's when someone just doesn't say anything or doesn't do what they want to do, go after the job they want to do, go after the boy or girl they want, you know, to talk to and hang out with. That's when it becomes an issue, you know, and, you know, I haven't really let this get in the way of any of that, but, you know, it's not to say that, you know, the anxiety that it causes me, or the amount of work that, you know, I put in to be seen as fluent to fit in, but, you know, it's a journey, and it's mine. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just said, like, you know, like there's two parts of you, like you feel like you're in two worlds. This is me and this is me also, but it sounds to me like you're closer to reconciling those two parts of Kathy, because you're doing stuff like this. Like, I heard you at the covert panel. I don't know if that was last week or, you know, like recently, that might have just been like a special covert stuttering session. And I was just like, wow, like, she's, look at her. She didn't do these things, you know, years ago. You know, I just think that you're being on a podcast that you're going to, that, you know, people are going to be hearing you. That's a big deal. And it sounds like the two sides are converging.
You know, it kind of, I block it out because I know I have this image of people, like, because if you look up my name, articles appear, and I try and block it out. When my head goes there, I'm like, okay, sharing my journey to help others is more important than hiding. But then I get freaked out when I'm like, okay, I'm sharing my journey here, but what if someone I know hears it? And, you know, most of the time I don't hear about it. And if I do, then, you know, I'll probably be a little bit embarrassed and talk about it. But yeah, I don't let my head go there because I don't want to know. If somehow I got on CNN, I'd probably dig a hole for a while and put my head in it. But yeah, I mean, you never know when your story can help someone.
Exactly.
But, you know, even when I began dating my husband, you know, after a few weeks, he looked me up and it took him a couple weeks to realize it was me because he's like, she doesn't block. And I never did around him until probably after we were married. Mm-hmm. And it was real mild. Even now, I don't like the big block. So it's, I don't want to know who knows. But even if people do know, like I've talked with them, I continue to hide around them. So it's like, why put myself out there when I'm going to continue to hide? It's a weird thing. So,
but what you're saying and what you're sharing and the immensity of your honesty here, lots of people are going to be inspired by this, whether you know it or not. So, I just want to say thank you so much for being a guest today and being so honest and sharing, you know, very personal parts of yourself. You know, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I've been hearing about your podcast for many years. And when you asked me, I was like, oh, I'm so honored that I was finally asked. So thank you very much. It's been great chatting with you.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Story. Na na na, na na.